This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. If you look at the rate of type 2 diabetes in San Antonio, and you look at the trend, it looks like we're losing the war against this chronic disease. It's only gotten worse during COVID-19, during this pandemic. San Antonio has one of the highest rates for type 2 diabetes in the nation. It's a leading cause of death. It's shortening life expectancy here, and it doesn't have to be this way. So we're going to spend some extra time and focus looking at type 2 diabetes all this week here on The Source. We do want to hear your stories about your diagnosis. When did you find out that you were diabetic? Do you think you might be diabetic right now, but you don't want to find out for sure? What about that reluctancy? And how do you deal with it? How have you managed your diabetes? What have been the challenges? What have been the lessons that you've learned that you can pass on to everyone else, that we can benefit from your experience? Give us a call. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at thesource@tprsource. And you can text us at that number, 833-877-8255. And today we're focusing on the state of diabetes here in San Antonio and in Bexar County. We're joined by Gabe Aguilar. He's a senior management coordinator for the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District's Diabetes Control and Prevention Program. And Gabe, welcome to The Source.
Yeah, thanks for having me today.
And we're joined by Dr. Nila Eskenami, assistant professor of pediatric endocrinology in the Long School of Medicine at UT Health San Antonio, physician at University Health Texas Diabetes Institute. And Dr. Eskenami, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thank you for having me as well.
And we're also joined by Curtis Triplett, Doctor of Pharmacy, Associate Director of Clinical Research at the University Health Texas Diabetes Institute and Associate Professor in the Division of Diabetes at UT Health San Antonio's Long School of Medicine. And Curtis Triplett, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Gabe Aguilar, give us the state of things here in San Antonio with diabetes. How are we doing with this?
Not doing great, and it's been something that's been going on for a long time. But as you mentioned earlier, it kind of gets caught in the background noise with so many things going on. Not the least of which is COVID-19 over the past year and a half or so. But we're consistently higher here in San Antonio than a lot of other places. Somewhat higher than Texas as a whole as far as overall prevalence. But where we really see the effects is in hospitalizations and amputations among our population, which are consistently higher than the rest of Texas and most other parts of the nation as well. So definitely a lot of work to be done to combat some of these higher rates and get people the care, the education, the things that they need to keep themselves out of the hospital, to keep themselves from having amputations and to live longer, healthier lives.
Dr. Nila Eskenami, when we say diabetes, what does that really mean? What is going on with somebody to say they have diabetes?
Yeah, so when somebody is diagnosed with diabetes, they're diagnosed because they have a high level of sugar in their blood. And there's several forms of diabetes. So it could include type 1 diabetes, gestational diabetes, like in pregnancy. But type 2 diabetes is the most common form of diabetes overall. And it's basically when the nutrients in our body, which are typically broken down to form, glucose, there's an alteration in that process. And so diabetes can occur when you're unable to either make insulin, which is a hormone that helps sugar go into the body, or if the body continues to make insulin, but it's just not responding well to that insulin, we call that type 2 diabetes.
So insulin is a key part of dealing with diabetes. Curtis Triplett, I'm hearing that starting September 1st, that a new law goes into effect in Texas that caps the price of insulin at $25 per monthly per prescription. Is that about to happen?
What, Thanks, David. Yeah, without a doubt, this is going to happen. I just can't see it not happening. And this has been happening in a few other states, and it's a huge, huge breakthrough. You know, at any one time, if you get the truth from people with diabetes, whether it be people not making insulin type 1 or what we're mostly talking about here is type 2, the insulin is a therapeutic agent that's absolutely necessary in some patients in order to control their glucose. And one of the problems with insulin is the price has really skyrocketed over the last couple of decades, despite the fact that insulin itself has not really had that many improvements in what it does. So, and that means that probably 1/4 of people out there at any one time have what they call done rationing of their insulin, meaning instead of taking the full dose, they're not taking it every day, or they're decreasing the dose on their own because of cost. Cost is one of the biggest reasons why people don't take their insulin. So $25 per each prescription. And in type 2 diabetes, this is important because many of our patients are controlled on a single type of insulin, a long-acting insulin every day. So by giving them $25 out of pocket and being able to get the full prescription for a full month, just an incredible step forward for our patients with type 2 diabetes.
So I've read that if I go right now to get my monthly dose of insulin, it could cost me $600 or more, $800. And that's my out-of-pocket cost. But now on September 1st, which is just a little more than a week away, that price will drop to $25. So Curtis Triplett and all the pharmacies are ready to work with that on September 1st?
They should be, because it those kinds of things are handled through the submission of claims. So this, of course, mostly applies to those folks who have insurance. So of any sort. So what should happen is that when the claim is submitted starting on that date, it should understand that the maximum copay for the patient is $25. Now, there will always be hiccups in any system. So I won't say that that won't be true, but I will say that in general, this should go into effect really soon.
What kind of damage has a person could, what kind of risk are they having if they ration their insulin?
Well, the risk is running high glucose. In a type 2 diabetes patient, the risk is high glucose. So we give medications to control their glucose to decrease the risk of long-term complications to the eyes, to the kidneys, to the nerves. And when people are rationing insulin, they're letting their glucose run high. And so what happens from a provider standpoint is they're saying, you know, despite me having you on insulin, your glucose continues to be high. Are you taking the medicine? Yes. Obviously, more adherence questioning should happen. But when I'm asking if you're taking the insulin, you say yes. Many times what happens is the next step is, well, let me increase the dose of the insulin. But they're really not taking the insulin as prescribed by the doctor or the healthcare provider.
So starting September 1st, in a little more than a week, the price will be capped for people to be able to buy their insulin at the pharmacy at $25 if they have insurance. And that could be a big breakthrough in a way of helping people here locally dealing with their diabetes and also saving them a ton of money. We're taking a break. We'll come back and take your calls. The number is 833-877-8255. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're doing Diabetes Week. Every day this week, we're going to be talking about the state of diabetes. And here in San Antonio, it is not good. It is one of the highest rates of diabetes diagnosis in the nation. And why is that? You can call in and tell us about your story with diabetes, 833-877-8255. We were just talking about how starting on September 1st, a new Texas law goes into effect that will cap the price of a monthly supply of insulin at $25. How does this impact you? Are you going to save money? Is this going to help you maintain your condition of diabetes? The number is 833-TPR-TALK. Gabe Aguilar, San Antonio Metropolitan Health District's Diabetes Control and Prevention Program. Who typically has diabetes here in San Antonio?
So diabetes isn't a stranger really to any particular part of San Antonio, but there are areas where the incidence is much higher, and those are kind of our near west, east, and south side communities, and really kind of the south as a whole, not just the near south side, but centered around downtown area. You see the highest incidence of diabetes in those areas. And those are typically areas of lower socioeconomic status. So we see, you know, places where there's less access to healthcare, whether that's uninsured individuals, where there's less resources, where we have, you know, what we call food deserts, where there's not as much access to healthy foods and fruits and vegetables and things like that. And so those tend to be the places where we do see the highest rates. And the higher age adjusted mortality rates as well.
And Naila Eskenami, Dr. Eskenami, this issue of low income people living in low income areas and high diabetes rates, is that because these are they have diabetes and it's not being treated, or are they, or because you're low income you're going to have a poor diet? What is the connection?
So it's like Mr. Aguilar said. I mean, I think there's pockets of areas in the city where we've observed that there's just also, when you overlap with other determinants of health, you look at education, you look at, you know, poverty in those areas of town, we see, you know, higher rates as well. And we know that there's a higher prevalence in Hispanics. And we have, you know, over 60% of our population in the city is Hispanic. And the multi-generational effect that we see, you know, we have not only first and second degree relatives of, you know, children that are being affected. It's just, we know that there's higher rates in infants of diabetic mothers as well. So it's just kind of this multi-generational effect that we see in our city.
And Curtis Triplett, is the way to treat diabetes, type 2 diabetes, I mean, is it pill popping and taking medication, or is it lifestyle? What is the best way to deal with it?
The answer to your question is yes, David. So the cornerstone of treatment of type 2 diabetes is still lifestyle. So we still want to make sure that our patients have all the information about how to eat healthier. Things that may be healthier in people without diabetes, such as eating more, some fruits and vegetables may not be as healthy in diabetes, so we have to choose the right vegetables. So, for example, corn has a lot of carbohydrate, may raise your sugar. You know, some fruits, watermelon has a lot of sugar in it. So we have to make people eat healthy, but also understand the foods that are correct. And, of course, that includes activity as well. So that is the cornerstone, but most people with type 2 diabetes will require medications to control their diabetes over their lifetime. And so it's a combination of understanding both, plus testing, plus, you know, healthy lifestyles and understanding of the disease itself.
I heard that eating white rice is bad for diabetes. Curtis Triplett, why is that?
I would kind of disagree with that in general. So there are no foods that are off limits to people with type 2 diabetes. But what we have to understand is everything needs to be taken in moderation, and we have to understand a total meal plan. So that's why we highly encourage people to, you know, there's lots of different sources for information on eating healthy. I'm not a dietitian, but I am a certified diabetes educator. And so one of the things I make sure to tell people is that everything is allowed, but it's a portion control. So if you're going to eat 3 scoops of white rice, it may be considered unhealthy because it may raise your sugars. But you may be able to get away with 1 scoop and it doesn't affect your sugar. So there's nothing wrong with white rice per se, but it can raise your sugar because all carbohydrates are broken down into sugar in our bodies.
All right, let's go to the phone lines, 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. We really want to hear your story with diabetes. We've got Patricia here on the line. Patricia, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. I love your show. I listen to it as much as I can. But I'm diabetic, but only for the last maybe 3 years. And the doctor told me before I was full-blown diabetic, I was pre-diabetic. Well, I didn't know what that meant. He didn't give me any kind of course of action other than lose weight and watch what you eat. Well, then I didn't do that. And then all of a sudden I'm diabetic and I'm on Trulicity and I'm on metformin. Until I was given nutritional information and information that working out will reduce my A1C, and I happened to take it to heart. I lost a lot of weight. I lost all my, I went down on my A1C, but then COVID happened. And then, you know, I went on a COVID diet. I ate everything in sight and I gained the weight back. And I just was diagnosed again just last week and back on medicine. But what my comment is, I think the medical field needs to take more attention to pre-diabetes and advise and have available the nutritional information instead of waiting until somebody becomes diabetic.
All right, Patricia, thank you for the call. Naila Eskaname, Dr. Eskaname, if you could, what is pre-diabetes?
Yeah, so that is a great comment by our caller. So before the development of full-blown, you know, type 2 diabetes, there could be a phase of pre-diabetes. And really, that's just impaired glucose tolerance. So it means that the blood sugar level, you know, before you're eating is not in the normal range. And you can also have pre-diabetes in the form of impaired fasting glucose. So, you know, when you wake up in the morning, your blood sugar is already outside of a normal range. And so in terms of, you know, prevention, I mean, that is really key in what we're talking about. So that's a really important point that, you know, a lot of the lifestyle changes really should occur at this stage, you know, before the development of full-blown diabetes. And so, you know, when we work with children, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of medications to treat pre-diabetes. So we really focus in on the lifestyle modification, you know, modest weight loss, increasing exercise, because that's central in not only treating type 2, but in pre-diabetes as well. And so we know that if you are even newly diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, lifestyle changes can go a long way, and it can induce, you know, a type of remission, not necessarily a cure, but just control of diabetes without necessarily the use of medications. And so exercise goes a really long way. Lifestyle changes in terms of healthy eating goes a long way before the development of the actual disease process.
And Gabe Aguilar at the San Antonio Health District's Diabetes Control and Prevention Program, is your program is there trying to help San Antonians deal with pre-diabetes with wellness checks or wellness programs? How are you doing that?
So yeah, just to emphasize what our caller said, absolutely right that we do need to be doing more on prevention, and that's something that our program shifted on probably about 4 years ago now. So our strategic focus moved towards pre-diabetic population, as we were previously focusing most of our efforts on self-management. So of course we're still doing that because there's definitely a lot of people that need those services. But what we offer in terms of prevention is a program designed by the Centers for Disease Control called Prevent T2, which is a diabetes prevention program. The Prevent T2, of course, referring to type 2 diabetes. And just as the doctor said, it can show significant effects in those lifestyle changes, and that's what it focuses on with pre-diabetic participants. So what's really great is the program that we use has been studied rigorously to show those kinds of results that we're looking for. And what the studies have shown in this program that we use is that those who lose 5 to 7% of their body weight throughout the duration of the program, which is a year-long program, and added 150 minutes per week can cut their risk of developing type 2 diabetes by up to 58%. And those percentages are even higher if you're 60 years or older. So, yeah, we offer those programs free to the community, and we're consistently out there. Well, not as much out there face-to-face as much as we used to be, but trying to recruit community members for these programs. And we offer them now virtually because of COVID-19. We're starting to look at in-person as well, but definitely want to be careful with some of our more vulnerable populations, including those with diabetes.
So diabeteshelpsa.com is a website you can go to, Gabe?
Our website, diabeteshelpsa.com. And we have different resources on there. We've got, you know, laid out the different programs that we offer. And most importantly, we have a Find a Workshop page on there where community members can go and reach out to our team directly. There's a list of workshops that are ongoing or that are coming up or that are currently going that people can sign up for. And by just reaching out to the facilitator of that program that's listed there, and get signed up and become a part of a program and hopefully get to reducing that risk.
All right, let's go to Jody on the phones. Jody, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My call is going back to the insurance part of it. On September 1st, it's $25 for insured people, but does that cost change as well for the uninsured?
All right, Jody, thank you for that. Curtis Triplett, Doctor of Pharmacy, UT Health San Antonio. What can you tell us?
Well, thank you, Jody, for the question. I think it is important to mention that, you know, we in San Antonio are extremely lucky that we have a really good basis for helping people who are not insured. The University Health System in Bexar County have what's called CareLink, which allows people who don't have other ways of getting insured to potentially sign up for CareLink. And CareLink is a service which allows you access to University Health System providers and medication sources. One of the things that we find is that most people who cannot get medications or are uninsured oftentimes qualify for a way of going through different pharmaceutical companies and requesting free medications. Or the other way of doing it is because they care for people that are uninsured. The University Health System sometimes gets very low-cost medications. Between those two different ways, the uninsured in San Antonio are lucky. They can go to a University Health System facility, sign up for CareLink, and get some of those medications for practically nothing.
All right, and we're going to break. We're going to continue to talking about the diabetes, the state of diabetes here in San Antonio. We had a caller, Roberto, couldn't stay in the line. He says he's Hispanic, and he comes from a long line of diabetics. His advice is that people should stop drinking soft drinks and eating sugary foods. We know that there is a big connection between the consumption of sugar and diabetes. We're going to come back. We'll talk more about that. If you got a question or a comment, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can also tweet at us at TPRSource or email us at thesource@tpr.org. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We'll be back after this break. Back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. This is Diabetes Week. We're going to be talking about diabetes all week long because this is an important topic, but unfortunately, we hear it so often that we kind of filter it out. This is a major concern here in San Antonio. Until today, we're getting the state of diabetes here in San Antonio and in Bexar County in South Texas. If you want to give us an update, we'd love to hear your story. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. How has diabetes impacted you and your family? We really like to hear that. 833-877-8255. Let's go to Ellen on the phones. And Ellen, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm a retired RN, 71 years old, and I have had type 2 diabetes for 20 years. I've always kept my hemoglobin A1C, the test of whether you're doing pretty well with it, between 6.1 and 6.4, using only metformin. Last year, my sugars began to go way up, even though I had not gained weight or, you know, changed anything different. My docs wanted to put me on one of the pancreas assisters, Trulicity, Omnipen, Bydureon. I discovered that even with Medicare, Medigap, and Part D, my co-pays for that would be over $100 a month. And I quite simply can't afford it. I have too much money to qualify for Medicaid. I have... because I'm on Medicare, I'm not eligible for any of the pharmacy providers. You know, the people who make it have a $25 a month plan, but you're not eligible if you're on Medicare or Medicaid. And as a result, my sugars, which used to run 105 fasting, are now running 150, and I'm having way more trouble with my diabetes. It's well controlled when I can get the injectables, and I can't afford them. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for that, Ellen. Curtis Triplett, you're a doctor of pharmacy, and I'm sure when you were studying to become a pharmacist, you were thinking about all the chemicals and stuff like that. But now it's all part of how do you pay for it?
Yeah, it's a great question, and thank Ellen for bringing that up, because she fits into that niche that is actually a really big problem for us. The problem is that she's insured. She has Medicare. She has a plan, but a lot of these medicines that are newer are expensive. And so what can happen is that even with a copay, it can be quite expensive. The medicine she was speaking about is not an insulin, and so it doesn't qualify for the $25 copay that may come into effect in September. So there's a couple ways you can handle this. One is to understand the medication and how it may help. So for the example, the medicine she was mentioning helps people lose weight, helps people improve the glucose, has a low risk of low blood sugars. And so sometimes if they can afford it, it's worth doing one of those medicines, even though it's a little more out of pocket. But as she said, she simply cannot afford that. The other thing you can do is there are other medications that are less expensive. We tend not to like those medications as much because they have a risk of low blood sugars on top of the other medicine she mentioned, which is metformin. But we will use them in cases where we don't have other choices. The second thing to consider is that we're coming up on another cycle of when you get to choose your different plans for Medicare. And I highly encourage people to go to a pharmacy, go to a provider, and find out those types of medicines oftentimes are covered better with other Part D kinds of plans. So shop around just like you do for other things that are expensive for your Part D plan to make sure that next time when you sign up, you could try to get that medication for a much lower copay.
Gabe Aguilar, Senior Management Coordinator for the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District's Diabetes Control and Prevention Program. When it comes to diabetes, type 2 diabetes here in San Antonio, we're hearing it's 15% plus of our population. We're hearing about the cost. And then there's also the fact that people miss work. And so some people just can't work at all. What is the economic impact of having so much diabetes here?
Yeah, so it definitely is a strain on the individual. It's a strain on, you know, the economy as a whole, because somebody with a diabetes diagnosis has, you know, a much larger portion of medical bills and things like that. There's just the cost of maintaining that disease. It goes up and it affects our city, affects everybody that it touches. So why it's so important to catch it at, you know, those prevention stages, as we've been talking about, because if we can get people from having to reach a diabetes diagnosis, they can also stave off incurring those additional costs that come with a full-on diabetes diagnosis. It's much cheaper, you know, to prevent than it is to maintain. it's like, you know, that leak in the ceiling. It's going to be a lot less expensive to fix the leak than it is, you know, a caved in roof and things like that. So we're just really doing our best to try to make people aware of the need to prevent and to be aware of their risk, because many people just aren't even aware that they're at risk. And, you know, maybe they think because they're a little bit on the younger side, that they're not at risk, but you know, really need to look at your family, look at your lifestyle choices that you're making, and to see if you are at risk so that you can get a hold of things before it gets to that stage.
Right. So this is why the city is investing. It puts money into these programs to control diabetes, because if it didn't, then it would be a bigger problem.
Yes, definitely. We want to keep it from getting to that stage. So we want to do the investment now in prevention.
And Nyla, Dr. Escaname, so before someone becomes diabetic, if you can keep them from becoming a diabetic, that would probably be the best thing to do. So what is pre-diabetes? How do we know if someone is pre-diabetic?
Yeah, so we talked about, you know, pre-diabetes being that stage before, you know, kind of full-blown diabetes. So they can have, when they go and check with their doctor, something called an impaired glucose tolerance. That means that their blood sugar level after eating is, you know, between 140 and 199. Or the other form of pre-diabetes that we see is in terms of impaired fasting glucose, which means that, you know, before they've had anything to eat in the morning, they go in with their doctor and their blood sugar check is between 100 and 126.
But what does that mean for someone? I mean, are there impacts on the way that I'm going to live my life? Am I going to, like, I hear a lot about thirst. If you have a lot of thirst, if you're slow to heal, particularly on your feet, all those things, are those signs that you are diabetic and undiagnosed?
Yeah, so, you know, pre-diabetes is this kind of, you know, stage before, but it might not necessarily have those symptoms. The symptoms of type 2 diabetes are what you mentioned. You know, you can have, you know, increased thirst, increased urination, you know, weight loss, but without much change in the diet. You can have, you know, sores or cuts that are slow to heal, tingling or numbness in the hands or feet. So those are all symptoms of type 2 diabetes already.
I see some people have like a darkening of the skin, maybe on their cheeks. Is that a sign?
Yeah, so those are signs of insulin resistance. And we actually screen a lot of that in children in schools. That condition is called acanthosis nigricans, and that's a you know, darkening, thickening of the skin, usually around the back of the neck. So that's a sign of insulin resistance, which can be a form of, you know, pre-diabetes. So, you know, we screen higher risk individuals, you know, either if you have a family member who has diabetes, you know, first or second degree relative. If you're in a high risk group, such as, you know, Hispanic, American Indian, African American, Asians, Pacific Islanders, or you have other risk factors like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, those are all reasons to go get screened beforehand.
And this is a problem. I imagine that if you don't fall into those ethnic categories, if you're non-Hispanic white, you may feel like, well, I don't have to worry about type 2 diabetes. Is that a mistake?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it has to do with kind of lifestyle. So if, you know, patients may feel, oh, well, you know, I'm pretty thin. I don't have all these high risk factors, but they can have a horrible diet, you know, and, you know, be drinking sodas every day and just a really high carbohydrate, high sugar diet. And that can, you know, is basically testing your body into developing insulin resistance. But we do know that there are certain groups that are at higher risk than others.
Just because you don't fall into those typical ethnic categories, that doesn't mean you're going to automatically get a pass. What about drinking alcohol, Dr. Escaname? Is that one of those, does that provoke diabetes?
So I am a pediatric endocrinologist, okay. So that's not typically something that we see. But
hopefully.
We see, you know, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And so that can increase your risk. And so we know alcoholism increases your risk for liver dysfunction, which can increase your risk for insulin resistance.
And so we hear about diabetes-related health complications as a cause of death. What does that mean, Dr. Iskanami?
So when we're talking about, we're looking at long-term complications. We're looking at problems with, vision, like retinopathy. We're looking at early onset, kidney disease. We're looking at high incidences of high cholesterol, which increases your risk for early heart disease. And these things, in my world, in pediatric endocrinology, we see them in children at a very aggressive rate. So, it's a very concerning trend that we're seeing.
All right, we're taking a break. We'll continue our conversation talking about the state of diabetes in San Antonio, what kind of wellness programs are available to the population, how you can take advantage of them. And if you want to hear your stories of diabetes with you and your family, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking diabetes, not just today, but all week, because it's that important for San Antonio. We do want to hear your stories of diabetes, how it's impacted you and your family, 833-877-8255. Let's go to the phones. We have Munir. Munir, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, my question is that my sugar is 121 to 129 sometimes. And I am pre-diabetic, and I am taking the Triagenta as a medicine. So I want to know that what I have to do not to be a diabetic.
All right, Munir, thank you for that. So let's go to Curtis Triplett, Dr. Pharmacy. What can he do? And I have some questions.
thank you. So I think we've been talking about some of those things. So it's really important. His sugar is, his glucose levels are kind of high. So 120 and above, we really have to start thinking differently. Even though it's not until 126 that we would diagnose type 2 diabetes, we need to consider that above 120, the likelihood of progressing on to get type 2 diabetes is extremely high. And we highly recommend that at that point, you just consider yourself to have diabetes and to start doing some of the interventions we've already talked about. Increasing activity, cutting down on simple sugars, juices, and of course, regular sodas, sports drinks that have sugar in them. That's a great place to start. The second place is to think about foods that are high in carbohydrates. That's something that comes from a grain product, and to try to cut down on those. So if you increase activity, cut down on those grain products, you're doing everything you can. But I also want to be truthful with the caller and mention that at that level of glucose, basically they should really consider that they have early type 2 diabetes. But if they're doing a lot of those things we just mentioned, high sugars, simple sugars, no activity, doing those now may be able to, as the doctor said, put it into remission for a while.
And so, Curtis Triplett, are there over-the-counter items that a person could purchase to, if they're pre-diabetic and they haven't gone to a doctor and they haven't got a prescription? Are there things that, I don't know why metformin requires a prescription. It's one of the oldest drugs that we have.
Well, it's a good question. And one of the things is that's more of the regulation at a national level. So there aren't a lot of over-the-counter things that can help you to lower your glucose efficiently. Now, everyone will tell you this supplement or that supplement. In general, there aren't any good supplements that have been shown to really control glucose across the board. Now, metformin is a prescription medicine, but one of the reasons why it's better to be prescription is because of the fact that it's used. You can make sure that what's in that pill that you take is exactly what you think is in there. So when it says 500 milligrams metformin, that's what's in there, within plus or minus a very small amount. Over-the-counter medicines are not subjective to the same kinds of scrutiny. As long as you're not hurting someone and you're not claiming that it cures or treats a particular disease, then you're allowed to market it. But when you look at what's in that pill, it can vary widely as far as the potency of what's in that pill.
All right. We do have a voicemail here. Let's give it a listen.
My name is Dee Villarivia. I have been a diabetic since 1996. I am a 75-year-old diabetic service-connected disabled veteran woman. I have walked 10,019,214 steps, which is 10,770 miles. This is important because I was told by two doctors, a gerontologist and my primary care VA doctor, that given my comorbidities, that I would not make it to 80. They told me that when I was 73, I was already on two medicines for diabetes, three medicines for blood pressure. And when they told me that, what were my options? Of course, they say lose weight, but they don't tell how, and they don't seem to have any options other than medicine. So when they said that I didn't want to do more medicine, I decided to resume walking. On the 1st of January 2020 is when I started seriously walking. I've lost about 50 pounds. I look younger than I did a year ago. A 75-year-old disabled veteran woman, there is connected, has walked 10 million steps and got rid of the need for 3/4 of her high blood pressure medicine and half of my diabetes medicine. And this is something I think people should know. Walking is all it took. My gerontologist said, who knew it only took for you to be walking? So I want the public to know that, especially other diabetics.
So Dr. Eskenazi, what about walking as a prescription?
I love that. I tell my patients, you know, if I could write a prescription for exercise and that, you know, it works so much better than metformin or any of these drugs that we have. You know, it makes the insulin in your body work better. It lowers the blood sugar level. So, I mean, we know that exercise goes a long way. And, you know, a lot of people just need guidance and enjoying, you know, with children, we say, and do something that you enjoy doing. You know, some people love to walk, some people love to swim, you know, and it really is something that kind of, you know, people will be consistent with. And that's the key, is being consistent with the type of activity that they're doing. So I applaud, you know, this ex-vet, thank you for your service. Cause that, I mean, it just really, is a testament of how much, you know, these lifestyle changes can do.
Let's go to our last caller, and we have Ludi Vinia. Ludi Vinia, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Yes, my name is Ludi Vina Hernandez, and a comment that I wanted to make, we were doing an exercise program where we would do a 10-minute exercise with the participants, and they would check their sugars right before we did the exercise, and then at the end of the 10-minute exercise session, and they could tell the difference of how much their numbers had lowered, their sugar levels had lowered, and that seemed to make a difference in them understanding how exercise can help. I also wanted to say that I have a grandson that I raised, and he's now 24 years old. In elementary school, they were taught about diabetes, and he used to call it monster diabetes, and it really made an impression on him that when he would come home, he would, you know, call us upon when he would see us having sugary drinks and foods that were not recommended. And to this day, he monitors his especially his sugary drink intake. I think that if we start them really young, that's the way to make a difference in the future.
Great call. Thank you so much for calling in. And Gabe Aguilar, San Antonio Metropolitan Health District Diabetes Control and Prevention Program. How are we doing educating kids?
So it's definitely becoming more apparent lately that in the last few years that we do need to do more as far as educating kids. We, our program in particular, has focused on adults historically and continues to, but in recognizing these trends that we're starting to see in youth, and our latest diabetes report points out a lot of that, we're really starting to look at ways that we can connect more with family-centered services, so ones that involve involve not just the parents, but the kids as well, to be able to start building those healthy habits earlier. Because especially the earlier we can get, the smaller incremental changes we can start to make that really pay the big dividends in the end, because we definitely get to the point where we do need to make some drastic changes with some folks. But if we can get those smaller incremental changes done at a much earlier age, we can be in a much different place down the road as we start to age.
But so, Gabe, what is the trend line right now in San Antonio? We've gotten used to looking at these trend lines with COVID, now looking at it with diabetes. It seems like it's getting worse.
Yeah, it's definitely not getting better as a whole. There are certain sections of the population that are maybe we're starting to see some decreases. But for the most part, it's still on that upward trend. You know, some years we see it kind of flatten out a little bit, and we see, you know, same news this year as last year, but for the most part, there's usually at least a small increase. And, you know, part of that is because we're starting to see more come up in our younger population as well.
And so, I mean, it was, I remember we did this show a few years ago, it was 14%. Now it's 15.5%. Gabe, it's in a trajectory that's not sustainable for locally. And are more resources going to be dedicated to try to deal with it?
So we're doing our best to really advocate for more resources for our program. Actually, this probably next month, we should be adding 3 new positions to our team, I know, and to be able to get more educators out there, getting this information that's so valuable in the hands of our community. But we're continuing to look for additional grants and resources that we can expand the programming that we're able to offer. And I think what a benefit that, you know, if there is a silver lining to this pandemic cloud, is that there has been more attention on public health and its value. And so we're starting to see more of that in terms of grant dollars to run programs that can right. help, especially in areas like COVID that are so closely tied to diabetes.
I want to remind people, diabeteshelpsa.com is where you can get more information about virtual workshops. Gabe Aguilar is with the City of San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. Nyla Escanami, doctor at UT Health San Antonio, Texas Diabetes Institute. Curtis Triplett, doctor of pharmacy, UT Health San Antonio. This is The Source.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Jackie Velez and Xiaowen Chan. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.